Nerdoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the new episode of the CalcioLand podcast. And tonight we have a lot to get to. We're going to discuss a little bit the implication of the UEFA ruling on Milan's future, give an update on Sarri's situation concerning Chelsea, talk a little bit about Morata's future, analyze Inter's exciting transfers, and we're going to close the show finally with a deep dive on Napoli, which we wanted to do for quite some time with our good friend Marco D'Onofrio from Sempre Napoli and Football Italia and Stadio Serie A. So an exciting show. But before we get to all that, I'm joined by our great friend, co-host, producer, Alex Goldberg, maker of fantastic videos. So, Alex, I'm going to ask you this question. I have a feeling you'll know where I'm going with this, but you've had some experience with this subject with your club, Chelsea. So tell me, how much did it actually hurt when Chelsea didn't make it to European competition? So you had the first year of Conte, they weren't in at all now. You know, they're not going back to the Champions League. So tell me a little bit how depressing that was for you as a fan.
Well, to not be in the best tournament period, at least in the sport, that's a huge hit regardless, just from an entertainment standpoint. Now, one could argue in Mourinho's last season with Chelsea, where he even got sacked halfway through, Chelsea finished 10th, and then the following year, they did not have any European football. And one could argue that helped them win the Premier League two seasons ago, because you're fresher, you can put all of your focus pretty much on the Premier League, and there's really no excuse to say anything about fitness. But with that said, David, there are so many damn negatives of not being in the European competitions. First of all, there's always the financial aspect of it. If you're not in European competitions, there's just less to gain. Now, I'm not really privy to what you get for making each round, but I know there's got to be some financial implications. But even further than that, not being in a European competition, whether it be the Champions League or the Europa League, actually gives you way less chance to try out some players, maybe they're young players, that still need developing. Now, maybe you wouldn't play a young player in a Champions League game, but it gives you way less games to really be able to switch up your lineups. And if you're not in a European competition, well, then your best shot of being in a European competition for the following year is getting one of the top three or four spots in your league that year. So you really want to play your best players, the players you can depend on. So you really don't have a chance to develop young players. So I think more so than anything, not being in a European competition can really stunt the development of maybe some of your younger, more talented players, but that you're a little too on the fence about playing because you can't fully trust them. So it really makes the club in an awkward, awkward situation. And there's just less trophies you can win, bottom line. So you alluded to it, David. I got to think that this directly correlates to the report of UEFA saying that Milan will not be in European competitions for the next two seasons. What was your take on that?
So it's interesting that you say two seasons. That's a very common mistake, Alex. Interestingly, I tweeted that as well when I read the first ruling. It was very, very unclear. So at least it turns out to be just one season. The confusion was on when it would take place. I guess it's because technically the current season that just finished isn't officially over for calendar reasons, but in any event, it's one season. So I think in a lot of ways, it could have gone a lot worse for Milan. Could have been 2 years. It doesn't seem like they'll have to pay a fine, have to raise a ton of funds from it. So certainly, though, it is a black eye for the club, and they're going to miss out on the Europa League for one season, which, you know, in the short term might be a blessing in disguise because, you know, you mentioned playing a lot of your bench players more. Like, Milan has, you know, not an incredibly deep squad. So maybe it's a blessing in disguise. But the way I see this ruling, I think you can really spin it into a positive. And the reason I say that is, you know, sometimes you really need a rock bottom moment to make some real changes in your life. And when I look at Milan in the past few seasons, to me, Milan hasn't been the Milan that I grew up with ever since they sold Ibrahimovic and Thiago Silva. So the club really needed to make a lot of changes. We thought last summer, with all their expenditures on the transfer market, it would be the end of the banter era for Milan, but it turned out to really be fool's gold in the end. So the way I see it, if some big changes happen, and what I mean by that is new owners, and it looks like we'll probably get that, this could really be a blessing in disguise for Milan. And the other thing, you know, I'm looking back at Juve back in 2006 when the Calciopoli scandal broke. Juve was relegated to the second division, so that took them out of European competitions for 2 years. And look at Juve now. You know, obviously it took some time, but Juve, you know, won 7 Scudetti in a row. They haven't won the Champions League, as a lot of people like to remind Juve fans and people that praise Juve, but they're certainly a powerhouse in Europe. And I feel like, you know, Milan today is in a better situation than Juve was when they were relegated. Juve lost a ton of really good players. Really hurt their brand for a while being relegated. They had never been relegated. So look at Juve now. So I think for Milan fans, maybe this could turn into a positive. And missing a season in the Europa League really isn't that huge of a price to pay if it ends up that Milan gets the right owners. And again, for me, just Milan hasn't been Milan regardless of this ruling. So hopefully it will open up some good developments. And I'm pretty optimistic. Might suck in the short term, but that Milan's going to get to where they need to be.
All right, David. So it's been a really popular topic, and I'm not just bringing it up because I obviously am a crazy Chelsea fan. But if you're on Twitter, if you're at all checking news in the football world, Maurizio Sarri, Chelsea, this is such a drawn-out drama. So I got to ask you, what is the latest on Maurizio Sarri to Chelsea?
So I think you got a pretty big hint on this, Alex, when earlier today I told you that we need to get ready for a Sarri special on Calcioland. So if you remember, we did one on Milinkovic-Savic at the beginning of the transfer window, and now we're going to do it on Sarri. And look, we've talked a lot about him on the podcast, so we're going to bring you some of the highlights of what we've discussed with some of our guests. We'll give you some in-depth analysis from both Alex and I. And the reason we're going to be working on this is at this point, it really feels like it's more a matter of time than if Sarri is going to be Chelsea's new manager. We've talked a lot about it on the podcast that we really needed to see some reports on Sarri terminating his contract with Napoli. That was the important part. It's not so much him reaching an agreement with Chelsea, and it looks like we are headed there for a variety of reasons. So I think we're in a good spot here. I also did a little bit of research on this now that it looks very likely that Sarri will be Chelsea's manager. The one thing that won't happen is I wouldn't expect Napoli players to follow him there. I think that's kind of somewhat of a gentleman's agreement between Sarri and De Laurentiis and probably Chelsea that you can have our former manager, but he can take some players with him. So that's the other angle on this. So be on the lookout next week. Hopefully we'll have more specific news on Sarri and Chelsea, and we'll give you a special on Sarri for fans who maybe aren't that familiar with the good and the bad that comes with Sarri. So we're going to try to give you a doctorate in Sarri ball next week with that special.
You know what? This Sarri saga has been right up there, at least on the Calcioland podcast, with the Alessandro saga. This has been ridiculous. I can only imagine your mentions on Twitter, let alone mine, and I have peanuts compared. So, David, speaking of you, I saw you broke some news today on Alvaro Morata. I got to know, what is going on with that?
So, first disclaimer, you know, I work with probably the best reporter in Calcio and football, maybe in Di Marzio. I work with a lot of other great reporters on his team, but make no mistake about it, I'm really not a reporter. Like I've always said, I use the Di Marzio gig as kind of a platform to get people to listen to my podcast, read my articles. You know, I consider myself a writer, an analyst, much more than a reporter. But once in a blue moon, I do stumble on to some information. You know, I like to, you know, through the Di Marzio site and through the years, I've gotten to know a lot of people that know things in the field. And once in a while, I'll get a nugget on this. So what I found out is that next week there's going to be a meeting between Chelsea and Morata's agent. They want to get together and figure out what they want to do next. I think Morata wanted to take a little break. I'm sure his agent wanted to kind of gauge the market for what's out there for potential other clubs interested in him. So now that they've done this and now that it looks like Chelsea's finally going to have a manager appointed, it makes sense for them to update each other. What's almost certainly going to happen is Morata is going to ask to find a new club. Chelsea are looking to not lose any money on what they invested in him, so they are looking for a return of between 65 and 70 million. So that's the news. Let's see what happens, but I think next week you're going to start seeing more and more reports on this meeting taking place. As always, I really enjoyed the Twitter reaction to this. It really gives me a better understanding of what Di Marzio goes through, because again, I very rarely do this. I don't want anyone to ever mistake, you know, what I do with Di Marzio. Is it's really comparing apples and oranges. As always, I found it interesting, the telephone games that happens with these reports. I didn't mention anything on the currency, 65-70 million. Even the person that told me didn't specify. I'm assume it's euros. I saw some people turn that into pounds. So again, always be careful when you see people quoting a source on transfers. Always try to get the news directly from the person. Again, I really appreciate the plugs, and you know, anyone can tweet whatever they think is appropriate. But if you're trying to get news, you know, I always recommend trying to go to the source. And for once this summer, it was me. So let's see how that works out. Now, one thing that always works out really well is when our listeners send in questions for the podcast. By now, you guys know the drill. We love getting questions on transfers, Serie A, journalism, TV, music, films. So you can do that with the CalcioLand hashtag. And which ones are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, this first one is always an interesting subject every 4 years. David, how much do performances in the World Cup impact a player's transfer value?
It's a good question, and actually I'm going to be writing about this for The Athletic next week. It's a very interesting topic. So I'll give you kind of a little bit of a preview of what I'm going to be writing about there. So the first thing that I'd like to say is always be very careful of small sample sizes with the World Cup. Let's use a pretty obvious example. If we went by just performances in the World Cup, I think the notion that Messi's in the conversation for being the best player ever would probably look a little bit laughable, because that hasn't been the best avenue for him. And whatever the reasons are, we can agree that hasn't been the best stage for him. So I think you always have to be very careful with sample sizes and whatnot. In general, I think a strong World Cup performance can impact a player's transfer value much more frequently than the opposite. So say a player flops and does poorly, I think the odds of that hurting a player's transfer value are much slimmer than the upside of performing well. I think the most obvious example, and the one that a lot of people point to, is a few years ago, Juve was after Alexis Sanchez, and they probably should have gone a little bit faster before the World Cup, where he played really well, tried to close the deal then. By the time he performed well in the World Cup, that ship sailed and they lost out on him. Another example, at the last Euro, Pjaka, who played pretty well for Croatia in that tournament, his performances were so good that Juve and Milan were in a bidding war to sign him. So in general, I think, you know, it can help a player much more than it can hurt. I've been getting a lot of tweets on Milinkovic-Savic, and look, I thought he played really well in the first match for Serbia, not so much the other two. Ultimately, I really don't think it's going to hurt much his transfer value, if at all. Did a little bit more digging, wanted to give you guys an update on him. Real Madrid still seems right now the front runner for him. Don't be surprised, though, if PSG, once they get rid of all their financial fair play issues, jump back into the race. And I don't think we can can out Manchester City quite yet either. For Manchester United, I'm still not convinced they're really in the running for another starting caliber midfielder that will cost a lot after they sign Fred. We've said all along it sounds like Pogba is staying, and I think the fact that Fellaini is going to stay, looks like he'll sign an extension, kind of tells you that they're not looking for like a superstar to add to the midfield because they think like their starting midfield is set. So that was a shameless opportunity for giving an update on Milinkovic-Savic.
Well, then I have to ask, David, did you say you can't count out Manchester City just yet?
Yeah, I wouldn't count them out quite yet. That's what someone who knows things told me, that to be on the lookout for that, even with Jorginho, who I think is pretty much a shoe-in to join City.
I can't take that. I can't take Manchester City. I can't. That's ridiculous. Oh, boy. All right, let's move on. David, what are your thoughts on the reaction to the Raja Nainggolan transfer, and what is your assessment of the deal overall?
I put a lot of thought into this. I wrote an article for Calcio Mercato where basically I looked at the best-case scenario for Inter, worst-case scenario for Inter, best-case scenario for Roma, worst-case scenario for Roma. And that really made me look at the deal from a lot of different angles. So I'll tell you, the first thing, the reaction on Twitter, I think way too much is being made of Santon being in the deal. To me, he's the least important player in the deal. When I look at this Nainggolan to Inter deal, I kind of see it as a three-team trade in the NBA when three teams complete a trade, and I think Pastore is really important in this deal. So when I look at this, I think you really need to judge how this goes down, not so much with how Santon does. He's really just a financial throw-in, kind of how in the NBA they put a player just to make the numbers work under the salary cap. Like Roma and Inter, as our friend John Solano said on the podcast, it'll be very interesting to see how they record the transfer fees in the press releases. So look at Santon as really just a financial aspect. Pastore is essentially the player who is going to replace Nainggolan because he's not such a high-profile player as Nainggolan. In the deal, Roma also got one of Inter's best prospects, midfielder Zaniolo, who's had a really, really good season for the Primavera. So look at it as a three-team trade. We need to see how Pastore does for Roma, and ultimately we need to see how much Nainggolan improves compared to last season playing under Spalletti. I think, you know, it's fair to say he's not coming off his best season. I also think it is fair to say that at the age of 30, his attributes and, you know, the strength, the dynamism, like all these types of things are things that unfortunately with age could go down. Maybe he is a player on the decline. But again, I think it was a gamble absolutely worth taking for Inter because they have Spalletti, the manager, who can get a lot out of him. So I think this is a very interesting deal. I totally get why Inter's doing it. I just don't think it's as bad as some are making it for Roma either.
All right, David, next Twitter question. This is an interesting one. Could Bonucci be sold as a result of UEFA's recent ruling, and what other players could leave?
So one thing that I forgot to mention at the top when we were talking about the ruling, you know, there was the press release yesterday. I think today there was a lot more information, a 30-page kind of UEFA explained their ruling a lot better. And ultimately, it had to do with the fact that they have a lot of serious doubts on Milan's new owners. I think the word credibility was mentioned quite a few times. So just wanted to give a little bit more background. So it's also not surprising to me that once this ruling came out, a lot of people, like, you know, they're like vultures over a carcass trying to see what can we get off Milan. And obviously Bonucci is probably the biggest name player on Milan. But, you know, people that have listened to the podcast and heard us talk a lot about amortized value on players, when you look at how much Milan spent on Bonucci just 1 year ago, if it was over 40, it was around 40 million, it's not that easy for them to make a profit on him because they've only amortized part of that transfer fee. So I'm not sure they'd be able to get much more than what they paid for last year, maybe even less. So while it's a lot of money, it's not a lot compared to his book value on Milan financial sheet. So you can't really make a big profit on him. Now, the big advantage of selling Bonucci, if you were to do it, is you save a ton on wages. He's one of the highest paid players in Serie A. But when you look at from the financial aspect on the transfer fee, Milan would be much better off selling someone like Suso, who arrived on a free transfer, so not a lot to amortize, if anything, on his contract, and Donnarumma, a homegrown player. So if I look at some players that need to be sold to bring relief to Milan, they make more sense to me. But again, they could also say, you know what, we can save a ton on Bonucci's wages. All this, though, will probably be decided by whoever becomes Milan's new owners. With Bonucci, it also will be interesting to see if he's willing to leave. If you remember, when he left Juve, it was also for personal and family reasons that he wanted to stay in Serie A. So we can't say if that's going to change this summer. So definitely pretty interesting to see what's going on with Milan.
All right, David, here's the next Twitter question. What's the latest on Inter's pursuit of Versalico, Politano, and Malcolm?
So Inter, man, they've been really having a great transfer window. Like, I'll say this, I know everyone's really high on the Nainggolan deal. I actually think the De Vrij deal is even more of a slam dunk. Like, he's a player who's entering his prime, plays a premium position at center back. I mean, Inter's had a fantastic transfer window already. Also, Asamoah, Lautaro Martinez, and Nainggolan, but they're not done. They have that hole at right back. Versalico, who played for Sassuolo, is now at Atletico Madrid, a player that's been on Inter's radar for a while, is their target. Now, right now, Inter's offering a loan with option to buy deal. Doesn't look like Atletico would accept that. Let's see if they continue negotiating, if that changes. Politano from Sassuolo is all but done. I saw Di Marzio was tweeting a lot about it today, on a loan with option to buy with some young players involved. And look, Politano's coming off a really, really good season. He was heavily linked to Napoli in the January window. He finished the season strong. He's the main reason Sassuolo avoided relegation. A lot of upside for him. It's also, you know, probably easier to play for Sassuolo than Inter, but that's a move that makes a lot of sense to me. Now, obviously, Malcolm from Bordeaux is a much sexier name, also more expensive. Now, the Brazilian player, really, it seems he really wants to go to Inter, and that Bordeaux would be open to a loan with forced option to buy deal. So let's see what happens. I suspect if Politano comes in to bring in Malcolm, Inter would have to sell a winger to not Perisic, but someone like Candreva or like that. So let's see what happens, but I don't think Inter's done quite yet, and so far you got to be really impressed with what they've done.
Amen. All right, next one. How about this? With João Cancelo's arrival, is Darmian to Juventus off the table? And are there any other Serie A teams interested in him?
So no, Darmian isn't off the table for Juve. João Cancelo became official, I thought, this morning. I'm losing track of time, and what a move by Juve. I think when you look at Juve's transfers, they went into the summer with their biggest hole at right back, and in the midfield, they brought in João Cancelo. Emre Can, you know, could be the guy that really helps improve their midfield, so they got to feel really happy with where they're at right now. But they are still interested in Darmian. The reason for that is Spinazzola, who they brought back from Atalanta, is injured. They lost other wing backs, Lichtsteiner and Asamoah, and Darmian can play on both sides. I also think Darmian could be insurance on Alexandre. I never felt, you know, the fact that Juve was interested in Darmian and Manchester United potentially in Alexandre, there was much of a connection other than that it's the same clubs. But, you know, if a huge offer comes for Alexandre, you know, as far as I see it, if someone offers $50 million for Alexandre, I think Juve would consider it. I think he's turning 27. Not coming off a good season, Juve's amortized quite a bit of what they paid on him. It'd be a big financial boost. But as of now, it looks like Alexandre is going to stay put. Maybe he'll sign an extension with Juve, but he has 2 years left. The other team that's interested in Darmian in Italy is Inter. Let's see if Napoli would become interested in him as well. But my guess is Darmian's going to be back in Serie A next season.
All right, David, next to a question. Explain the Cherry to Genoa deal, and why do they have to fork over $15 million for Cherry after selling Perin for a below-the-market deal?
It's a It's a great question. So look, we've been saying on the podcast for a while, people ask us why was Pidgin so cheap for Juve? And I said, well, look, there's definitely going to be some more deals between Genoa and Juve that'll probably not look so great for Juve, might look good for Genoa. So yeah, I guess I was right that there's going to be more deals between Genoa and Juve, but this one looks like another deal that's going to be in favor of Juve. Now, Cherry is a promising striker. If Juve gets 15 million for him, God bless him. You know, granted, he does have some upside, but this looks like it would be another deal in Juve's ledger. And look, you know, it's a long summer. Maybe there'll be 2-3 deals that go Genoa's way with that. So an interesting situation there. Let's see what happens. It seems Juve is trying to raise a lot of funds by selling some of their younger players. And keep in mind, you know, Juve's already spent a lot this summer. We found out that Emre Can wasn't so much of a free transfer because of that $16 million fee. We've seen them spend $40 million on Cancelo, and I would not underestimate the fact that they spent significantly just to redeem Douglas Costa's rights. So Juve is trying to make up some of that money by selling some of their younger players.
All right, next question is pretty simple. David, can you explain the Mandragora to Udinese deal?
So this one fits in exactly in that. Mandragora is one of the young Juve players owned. He was on Crotone last season. They're raising funds for him. So the way this deal works, it's very interesting. It's reported that Juve is going to get $20 million from Udinese for selling him, but they have a buyback for $24 million. So if you think about it, this is really the evolution of the co-ownership deals that we used to see in Italy for so long. There were outlaws a few years ago, which basically clubs co-owned players. Typically, it was a big club with a small club to give a financial incentive to the smaller club to play the player from the top club. That way, if the player performed, they could get a bigger fee once the co-ownership deal was resolved. If you think about it, this is pretty much the same thing, but you're locking in the price. So Juve would sell Mandragora, get $20 million to buy him back. They would spend $24 million. So Udinese would get that $4 million different plus the amortized value of whenever Mandragora leaves. So it's a smart move for both involved. Yeah, it's a pretty big fee up front. And, you know, I know there's a lot of people talking about financial doping with transfers. But look, you know, this has happened not just with Juve. You just have to look at Inter selling a lot of youth team players that have no Serie A experience for big money. I mean, this is really how football works. Even Roma spent a lot on Santon on paper to make that deal work. So this is kind of the reality of what happens with transfers.
All right, this next question, I got to admit, I never thought we'd be talking about Jeremy Boga on the Calciolan podcast. But David, is Sassuolo a good fit for Chelsea's youth prospect Jeremy Boga on loan?
So I've never seen Boga play, so I can't really speak to that angle. I was asked if Sassuolo's a good fit to develop a player, and I think it absolutely is. This is a club that's developed a lot of good young players in Serie A. They've been involved in previously in co-ownership deals and synergy deals, bringing players for bigger clubs to Italy to use a non-EU slot. So this is a lot of what Sassuolo does. They recently changed manager, De Zerbi, who's coming from Benevento. I'm very high on him. I think he's an offensive-minded coach who does well with young players. So I've never seen Boga play. I can't speak to his ability, but I think there's a good chance that ability will increase at Sassuolo.
All right, yeah, I'd be all for it. It would give me an opportunity to watch a Chelsea player in Serie A. What better for me? I'm going to be selfish on this one. All right, let's move on. This also kind of has ties to my club, but I'll stop being selfish. David, why is a player as promising as Daniel Rugani on the market for just $40 million?
When I hear just $40 million, I'm like, man, these are Premier League fans are pretty rich for my blood. I mean, that's a ton of money, especially, again, we go back to amortized value and whatnot, when you consider what a huge profit this would be for Juve. They didn't spend a ton on Rugani. I think it cost them overall between the co-ownerships $8 to $10 million. They've had him a few years on the club. I mean, this would be a massive profit for Juve. I mean, just look at the difference. Milan selling Bonucci after 1 year after spending $40 million on him is very different than Juve selling Rugani after having him for a while and spending much less to buy him. So A, it'd be a great profit for Juve. I, you know, there's a lot of debate that Rugani got a fair shot at Juve or not. I certainly think he did. I'm not the biggest Rugani fan out there. People who listen to podcasts know that. But I will say this, for Chelsea, that would make sense. Look, Sarri is almost certainly going to be the coach. Sarri is the manager who launched Rugani. Sarri is going to come to Chelsea, have to teach the players there his system. I think it makes perfect sense to have someone who's used to it. And again, as I said at the top of the podcast, doesn't look like Sarri is going to be able to bring in some of his former Napoli players. So why not try to get the best ones that he had at Empoli and, you know, eventually see how that works out. So I think, you know, this would be a good deal for all involved, to be honest, if it happens.
You know, you once asked me at the top of the podcast if I wanted Higuain on Chelsea, and I said it was all dependent on Sarri coming to Stamford Bridge, and I will take that answer and apply it exactly to Daniel Rugani. If Sarri wasn't coming, why would I want a player that was really underwhelming? But overall, he's got promise, and he knows Sarri, so I'd be much more for it. If obviously.
I'm so glad you said that, because that reminded me we was talking about Chelsea wanting 65 to 70 million for Morata, and everyone laughed and said there's no way they'll get that. And look, you know, A, it's early in the transfer window. Absolutely no reason for Chelsea to try to lowball themselves. They should demand as much as possible. And look, it's not out of the question that maybe they work out a deal with Juve involving Higuain. Now, I doubt it would be a straight swap, because for financial reasons, that wouldn't make sense. But, you know, maybe Chelsea pays a lot to get Higuain, you know, who is an older player, and Juve pays a lot to bring back Morata, the team where he's done well. It's also not out of the question that maybe Juve tries to structure a deal for Morata similar to Cuadrado deal, a two-year loan or whatnot. So an interesting situation there, and I think you make a really good point there. Some players would have much more value to Chelsea if Sarri is there with them.
God, so many ties between Chelsea and Serie A right now. I'm absolutely loving it. All right, David, let's move away from football. Last Twitter question. Have you seen the horror movie Hereditary, and is it as scary as they say?
I have seen it, and I have to say horror movies aren't my favorite genre, but, you know, because we like to talk pop culture here, and in general, I really like to watch movies that are, you know, are talked a lot about as part of the pop culture here in the United States. I was like, I have to go see this movie. I've heard so much about it. So I have to say, overall, I was very underwhelmed. I thought it was directed well. I thought the music was excellent. I thought the main actress, Toni Collette, was fantastic. It kind of reminded me of an actress in a great David Lynch movie. Her facial expressions, her acting was excellent. One of the other main characters, actor Alex Wolff, who was in Patriots Day about the Boston Marathon bombing, I thought was really good. But I found the movie overall to be pretty ludicrous. The twist in the middle was pretty good. The twist at the end I found was incredibly lame. It was scary, but it was much more of the suspense type scary more than gory. There are some gory scenes, but not that bad. I was very disappointed because I had heard a lot of people kind of put it on the level of Get Out and A Quiet Place, which were two other horror movies that kind of transcended the genre. I don't think it's anywhere close to that. I actually think Get Out is probably one of the best movies of the past 10 years. For The Quiet Place was really rather good. I was pretty underwhelmed by Hereditary, but again, not my favorite genre. If you have comments on that, hit me up on Twitter, because maybe I missed out on it. So thank you, everyone, for your support with the questions. Keep them coming with the CulturaLand hashtag. If you're listening to us on iTunes on your iPhone right now, please leave us a 5-star rating. It takes only a couple of minutes. We love reading the comments. I've been tweeting a lot on them. So please support the podcast. Also, really important that you download our podcast to help us grow. So thanks for your support. Now we're going to bring on our good friend Marco D'Onofrio to finally take a deep dive on Napoli. So for the interview part of the podcast, I am thrilled to be joined by our good friend Marco D'Onofrio. You guys know him on Twitter as at Cubani7. We've had him on multiple times. I'm very excited to have him join us tonight. He's, of course, the host of the Stadio Serie A radio show and podcast. He's a co-host on the podcast of Sempre SSC Napoli, great friends of ours on the podcast. You also can read him on Football Italia and Soccer 360 Mag. The reason I'm thrilled to have him on is, A, we're good friends, and we've been wanting to do a deep dive on Napoli for a while. It's been rather challenging to get a really good guest for this. You guys know we like to check in on the major teams in Serie A every once in a while to see what's going on. So, Marco, it's a real pleasure to have you on. Welcome back to Calcioland.
Nah, David, the pleasure is all mine, buddy, and thank you so much for having me. And you know what? Congrats on your continued success, because The Athletic is incredible, and knowing that you're part of the team just ups the ante for them. So congrats on all your hard work, and to see it pay off is great.
All right. Well, that's way too kind of you. So let's jump into Napoli before my ego gets out of hand here. So I wanted to ask you, let's start with this. We've had you on during the season, and, you know, we talked about the beautiful football of Sarri, the great performances of the players. And I have to hand it to De Laurentiis, pulling out the Ancelotti, you know, is like pulling out a rabbit out of a hat. I didn't fully expected, but I think what a signing for Napoli. I think this really is a statement for the club. So, you know, you've had time to digest this for a little bit. So give me your take. What was your reaction to the appointment of Ancelotti coming to Napoli?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, De Laurentiis pulled a rabbit out of the hat. And to be honest, even when I first read the reports and the rumors, I didn't believe them. To be completely honest with you, it didn't seem like it was a possibility, because there was talk of Ancelotti or Conte, and I mean, either one of them would have been fantastic, and I couldn't see either one of them coming to Napoli. And to think that Ancelotti has decided to come speaks volumes of how far this team has come and how far this club has grown over the last decade, and it is definitely exciting. Don't get me wrong, I'm not one of those Napoli fans that is bitter towards Sarri, because I think Sarri deserves a ton of credit for everything he's done, and it's definitely sad to see him go, but I don't blame De Laurentiis for moving on as quickly as he did, because he wasn't getting an answer from Sarri. Yep. And even after the last match in that post-game press conference, Sarri still refused to comment on what his future was, and I think he was waiting to see what his options were. So De Laurentiis didn't want to be stuck, and when you've got a guy like Ancelotti who's waiting and willing to come, you have to sign that contract and you have to make it work. So I'm excited. I think I'm cautious, because some fans believe that Ancelotti is going to be the savior and, you know, ensure that Napoli does win the Scudetto. And I mean, at the end of the day, he's still just a coach, and I'm not underestimating the value and the importance of a coach, but there's a lot more to winning the Scudetto than putting the right guy in the bench. And I think we gave the keys to a great manager and a great tactician, but let's see what he can do. I'm excited, but I also think that we've got to be realistic, and there's still a heck of a lot of talent in Serie A, and there's some great teams. So it's going to be a battle, but I think Napoli fans should be excited, and I think it speaks a lot of the ambitions of this club, because Ancelotti is not coming to Napoli if he doesn't believe that he can win, and clearly De Laurentiis was able to convince him of that.
Very interesting what you said, because it kind of leads perfectly to my next question, because shortly after Ancelotti was appointed, I asked my Twitter followers if they felt like if he could match or even exceed the 91 points that Sarri achieved last season, which is a record for Napoli. I've said it many times. I think, you know, the fact that Napoli didn't win the Scudetto says way more about Juve's dominance than anything they were doing wrong. And it was very interesting that most of my followers didn't think that Ancelotti could exceed these 91 points. And it's interesting that it's a lot of the same people who say you can't win with Sarri's style of play, which I found, you know, those are almost mutually exclusive concepts to me. So let me pose the same question to you, Marco. Do you think there's a chance Ancelotti matches or even exceeds these 91 points this season or at any point while he's at Napoli?
Listen, anything can happen in the world of culture, but you're right. Let's not underestimate or understate how big 91 points is. Napoli was the first team ever to reach that 90-point plateau and not win a Scudetto. So I know a lot of people have been critical about Sarri's style, but listen, Sarri would have won the Scudetto in any other season with that point tally that he had. So give credit to Juventus for the heck of a season that they had, because they deserve what they got. I mean, you win a Scudetto with the amount of points that they accomplished, give them full credit. But it'll be very interesting to to see what Napoli puts on the pitch this season. And also, we got to mention that Sarri got that 91 points by basically giving up on Europe and in the Coppa Italia. That took everything that Napoli had. They put it all towards that season, and in the end, it didn't necessarily pan out the way they would have liked it, but there were some exciting times, and there were some moments that Napoli fans, I don't think, will ever forget. With that said, I don't know if Ancelotti is going to be able to match that 91-point total, and I know that's a little bit of a cop-out, but it's going to be very, very difficult to reach that, and I think Ancelotti was brought in not only to do well in Serie A, but I think De Laurentiis really wanted to start being able to compete in Europe and maybe win another Coppa Italia. Whether Napoli legitimately and realistically has a chance to ever win the Champions League, who knows? But I think he saw what Roma did this year and he says, why can't that be us? And, you know, you want the Scudetto and you want to go for it and you want to push for it, and we'll see what they can do. But let's give Sarri full credit for that 91 points. And anybody who thinks you can't win playing that style clearly hasn't watched Guardiola, because Guardiola plays a very similar style, and his Man City were ridiculous. I think this year we saw Sarri's limitations too, though, when that came to squad rotation. And that's where Ancelotti will really change things up, is that he's going to use a deeper squad and a deeper bench. And it'll be very, very interesting to see what happens. But I do wish Sarri all the best of luck if he does end up at Chelsea. And I think that Chelsea side will be really, really interesting to watch if that is the case.
Absolutely. Perfect segue to the next question here. So how would you describe Sarri to a Chelsea fan? Now, we talked a little bit about his style. You kind of hinted already, and maybe his lack of rotation. But how else would you describe him to someone who isn't that familiar with the way his teams play? Or how he is as a person as well?
Sarri is a philosopher. He's entertaining. His brand of football on the pitch is, honestly, is unmatched. And I know Guardiola is Pep Guardiola, and he's done wonders, and Sarri hasn't gotten to that level yet, but Sarri also hasn't coached teams that Guardiola has. And so it'll be very, very interesting that if he does end up at Chelsea, what he does with I don't want to say a bigger club, but a more financially luxurious club, or a club with more resources, to say the least, and whether we'll see that rotation, whether maybe he learned a little bit. I think a guy like Hazard could be incredible to watch. I think he can put maybe 100 goals in Sarri's system at the back of the net. So it'll be very, very interesting to watch, and I think Chelsea fans should be excited, but I think they should also be a little bit cautious, again, because Sarri hasn't won a whole lot. And as much as he deserves praise for his style and his brand and for what he's done with Napoli, he also didn't win any trophies, unlike his predecessors, right? Mazzarri at least won the Coppa Italia. Benitez won a Coppa Italia. Yeah, they didn't get to that point total, and they weren't able to do what Sarri was able to do in Serie A, but at the end of the day, they left with silverware, and that can't be said with Sarri. So I think Chelsea fans need to be patient, because it could be a little while before we fully see Sarri's style really implemented on the pitch and before players really buy into it and are able to play the way Sarri expects. And Sarri does not, he doesn't take nonsense, right? And that's why we didn't see a lot of rotation, because if he truly doesn't trust a player, that player's not playing. So it'll be very interesting to see how he handles bigger egos, right? Yeah, he dealt with Higuain in that first season, but Higuain was really that big, was really the only massive superstar that had that ego. So when you're dealing with a few players, it'll be very interesting, but I think Chelsea fans should be excited, but I think they need to be patient, because Sarri struggled in his first few weeks in Napoli, and Abramovich is not the most patient of men, as we've seen in the past. So it'll be very interesting, but I think Chelsea fans should be excited, and it'll be very, very entertaining to watch Sarri's Chelsea meet up with Guardiola's Manchester City. That's for sure.
So I think I know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask it anyways, and maybe you can share a little perspective on this. I take it you probably weren't that surprised that Napoli president De Laurentiis played hardball with Sarri. You know, you mentioned too, he felt slighted by Sarri's actions at the end of the season. I think even regardless of that, he is someone that if he has an asset, boy, is he going to make the most of it. Now, a lot of people make fun of him for that, but for me, it's all a matter of perspective. I wish more Serie A presidents were like him. Make it harder for players to leave, and if they do leave, get a lot for them. So give me your take on that. I take it you weren't surprised at all that he didn't make it easy. He's not making it easy for Sarri to go to Chelsea.
No, absolutely not. I wrote an article a few weeks ago for Football Italia stating that, you know, De Laurentiis has always played hardball. Realistically, he probably was the president that made release clauses as big as they were once Edison Cavani was sold for 63 million euros. That was the first time I really, really remember a player being sold through release clause for that amount of money. And he's also the guy that, after Higuain went to Juventus, said, you know what, I'm putting in release clauses that are only valid for foreign clubs because I'm not letting another one of my players be poached by a Serie A rival. And so De Laurentiis, one thing about him, sometimes he talks too much and sometimes he says things that you look at and are just like, buddy, what are you saying right now? But with that said, he also knows the value of his assets. And when it came to Sarri, he never wanted to let Sarri go. He wanted to keep Sarri. He made that clear. And Sarri refused to commit. And the problem, and I think the frustrating aspect from De Laurentiis' point of view, was that he didn't get an answer either way. And so when that became the case, Sarri, he had to go when you have Ancelotti waiting. And so am I surprised that De Laurentiis is asking for originally was asking for the €8 million release clause, and now it's looking like he's going to settle for €5 million. But what does that say? That he was able to replace his coach with Ancelotti, basically and essentially sack Sarri, and instead of having to pay Sarri out, he's getting paid. So you know what? Give credit to De Laurentiis because he really is a man who has saved this club, and fans can be so harsh on him, and a lot of fans were really, really ridiculing him, especially the last game at the San Paolo, and really letting De Laurentiis have it. But I don't know what else he was supposed to do. You know, he offered Sarri the money, he gave him opportunities. Sarri didn't want to stay, and you know what, I don't necessarily blame Sarri for that either, because I really think that Sarri felt he couldn't do any more for this club. You know, he earned 91 points. It took everything out of that group, and he still came up just short. And it's tough to see him go, but De Laurentiis is getting value for his assets. And if that gentleman's pact is true and he's ensuring that his players don't get poached from Chelsea, then heck, he deserves even more credit. So as sad as it is to see Sarri go, and I hate seeing this power struggle between the club, Chelsea, and Sarri, because I do really wish all the best for Sarri, De Laurentiis has to look out for his club, and that's what he's done consistently.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you mentioned his style too, which is pretty bombastic, and, you know, he's not shy with his words, but I think it's also really important to know the city that he represents. I mean, Napoli isn't, you know, the typical city that holds a big club, so I think, you know, he has to also, his personality has to reflect that. So now, I'm a huge fan of his. For those that aren't familiar with his story, I mean, he took over Napoli when they were bankrupt in the third division. Napoli has had a lot of really, really good players, and they handled the transfer market as well as anyone. They never have debts or anything, so he deserves a ton of credit. So we've talked a lot about managers, presidents, and whatnot. Let's get into some players a little bit. So Jorginho to Man City, we're down to details, of course, with De Laurentiis playing hardball, down to details. Still means a lot of work, but ultimately it looks like that deal will happen. So how would you describe him to Manchester City fans who might not be that familiar with him?
Fans should be excited. I love Jorginho. I loved watching him play. I mean, to me, he probably is the best Italian. He is the best Italian maestro on the planet, maybe the best Italian midfielder on the planet right now. He can pick out a pass like nothing. He can quarterback your team. He's going to fit in fantastically in Guardiola's system. I mean, just look at his numbers in terms of the passing accuracy and the amount of passes he completes a game. I mean, sometimes it's in excess of 500, which is just ridiculous. And he really is one of those players who never says anything wrong, never does anything wrong, and it's just great to have on your team. And I really am going to miss having Jorginho on the squad, but I'm also excited for him to get the opportunity to play for Guardiola. And I'm excited to see what he can do. And I might even be supporting Man City in the Premier League this year because of Jorginho. So I think fans should be excited, and he really is going to fit in fantastically with Guardiola and in that system. So I think fans should be excited. And, I mean, you can tell the impact he makes, and you can see the impact he makes with the Italian national team. And it makes you question even more why it took Ventura as long as it did to call him up, because he wasn't called until, or he didn't play until that second leg against Sweden. And by then it was way too late. But I think he can provide so much to this Manchester City team, and I think they should be excited to have him.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. You know, we know of the admiration Guardiola has for Sarri, so it's not surprising. You mentioned it was kind of the quarterback of the team that Sarri had that he would go for. Now, I will tell you what was pretty interesting to me is how Napoli is going about replacing Jorginho. So they have this highly rated midfielder who was basically Jorginho's understudy in Diarra. I thought his first season at Napoli did really well. Are you surprised they didn't just hand him the keys? Because it looks like they're going to bring in Fabian Ruiz from La Liga to kind of help replace Jorginho. Do you see that as a slight to Diarra, or am I missing something here?
I don't, just because traditionally with Napoli, before they let a big name go, they try to announce another signing first, and almost just to appease the fan base, and I think that's similar in this situation. And I also think that with Ancelotti, you're also going to see a lot of rotation, unlike with Sarri. So had Sarri remained and they made this move, maybe I would have been a little bit more concerned, but I think you're both going to see them gain ample playing time, because Ancelotti's proven in his past that he's not afraid to rotate his squad and that he's going to make the most of every player on this team. So I think Diawara is going to still get plenty of time because he is an exciting young player. And I think he's got loads of talent and loads of potential. And I was actually disappointed not to see him play more under Sarri. So I think Napoli fans should be excited about the acquisition of Ruiz once it's made official, because he seems like a very exciting player. I can't speak too much about him because I haven't really watched much of his action last year, but everything I've read has been positive. And I think it's an exciting time. And I also question, because, you know, Napoli fans tend to ask questions like that in terms of, well, what's going to happen if we sign him? What's going to happen to this other player? But if you look at a team like Juventus, just look at up top, right? You've got Higuain, Mandzukic, Bernardeschi, Dybala, Douglas Costa, you know, the list is endless, and they make it work. And it was that depth that made them or led them to the Scudetto this year. That was the biggest difference. So when it comes to Napoli acquiring more players and trying to find space for them, hey, make it happen, make it work. And I think Ancelotti, unlike Sarri, will do that. And that's what Napoli ultimately needs if they're going to compete over a grueling 38-game season.
Very, very interesting. So now let's talk about the goalkeeper position at Napoli. I felt like, you know, if you had to kind of look at a weakness on Napoli, like last season, Piperina was probably it. You know, we know about his great leadership, his ability with ball distribution, which is very important with Sarri. So now it looks like Napoli, Piperina's headed to Milan. They're going to replace him with a young prospect in Mere, very highly rated, owned by Udinese, played at Spal, but only has about 15 games of Serie A experience. It looks like Carnesis, who's had been up and down as a goalkeeper, is coming. Maybe they'll bring in another veteran, someone like Sorrentino or Consigli. So give me your assessment on the goalkeeper position. When you hear these names, do you feel this is an upgrade from Rina, or are you still concerned about the position?
I'll say this, Rina, he had his time in Napoli. He was that leader on the pitch, off the pitch. And I actually thought he was actually pretty good last year. I was very concerned about him heading into the season because he's always been known to let in a couple of those howlers, but we didn't really see that last year. And I thought he played pretty well, and I know Sarri was a big fan of his because of his ball distribution. But at the same time, I think it's time for him to go. And I also, I mean, we're talking all these links with the Camorra are coming out, and we don't know really what's going on and whether any of this is true. But De Laurentiis was in a pretty big hurry to get rid of Reyna, and he made it clear he wasn't going to resign him. So it also makes me question whether De Laurentiis knows stuff or knew stuff then that we don't know, and we might never know. And there maybe is a reason that He wanted Reyna out of Napoli. So that's one issue. And it does concern me that Napoli still haven't officially signed their replacement, because it feels like every week they're being linked to a new guy. And now Murray, like you mentioned, seems to be the guy coming in, and he is very highly touted and he's got a ton of potential, but he is very inexperienced. And if this is a team that's going to compete, they do need to bring in a veteran. So I'm definitely concerned about that. And it also frustrates me that it's taken as long as it has, knowing that Reyna was going to leave all along. I mean, if you look at Juventus right now, they've got two guys to replace Buffon and two great goalies. And they got Pedin for almost nothing. Because I think, injuries aside, if he can be healthy, he's an absolute beast between the posts. And I would have loved to see a guy like him come to Napoli. Unfortunately, that's not the case. But they do need a veteran. If they're going to sign Murray, which would be great, they do need a veteran just in case, you know, to talk him through the difficult times. And you know what? I hope that he can be everything that people are talking that he can be. But so often is the case with footballers that you never really know how they're going to pan out until they really get an opportunity. And Napoli, like you mentioned off the top, is not your typical Italian city, and the pressure never stops. And maybe that's one of the reasons they haven't won the Scudetto in as long as they have. So he's going to have to deal with all that. But I am concerned about that. And if there's one area with this team that does concern me, it's absolutely between the posts. So I'm hoping for a quick, speedy solution, but it does get frustrating when, you know, they're as close as they were to Rui Patricio, only to say, you know what, we don't want him anymore. And it was the same with the German keeper who ended up with Arsenal now. So
I know, yeah.
Yeah, so as frustrating as it is what it is. And you know what, hopefully the position will be covered soon and we can stop talking about it. But the longer it goes on and until a deal gets made, there's going to be question marks and fans are going to be left wondering what's going on.
So let's close on this player. When people asked me a few months ago after Milinkovic Savic who I thought was going to be the next huge breakout star in Serie A, I really didn't hesitate long, and I picked Milik at Napoli, obviously with the caveat if he can stay healthy. When he has been healthy, he's actually done rather well for Napoli. I think he's more of a classic number nine than Mertens. I think he fits perfectly for Ancelotti. I think Milik, if he can stay healthy, is going to have an absolute monster season. So give me your thoughts on him. Are you excited to what he could do next season for Napoli?
I think I'm excited for Milik. I'm cautious because I really hope he can stay healthy. He's proven what a different element he brings to the squad when he is healthy and when he is in the lineup. And honestly, I think had Napoli had him all season, we'd probably be talking about them as Scudetto champions, just because with Dries up top, it was a small lineup. They would be putting balls into the box and there was nobody to get on the end of it. With Milik, you're able to put balls in the air. He can get on the end of it and score those goals. And so he provides that big, powerful striker that Napoli lacked last year. And I mean, listen, Mertens is fantastic. He's incredible. He's got a ton of skill, but he does lack that. And so sometimes it's nice to have your more traditional striker. And we know Ancelotti loves his goal poachers. So Milik, I think, will fit in well with this team. And my only concern, again, is whether he can stay healthy, because clearly in his first two seasons, he hasn't proven that. And so if he can remain healthy and remain on the pitch, he just adds a whole new element to this club and to this squad that I think fans should be excited about, because he has the right attitude. He's big, he's powerful, like I mentioned, and he does provide a legitimate goal threat and a legit threat in that box that sometimes Napoli doesn't have. And I mean, they'll be playing a very different style of football under Ancelotti, but with Sarri, that's really what they lacked more than anything, because teams figured out, listen, we just got to worry about the balls on the ground. I mean, they don't really have an aerial threat. And Milik provides that for them. So if he can be healthy, I think fans should be excited. And I think he does definitely deserve an opportunity with the club, because earlier in the year, and it seems absurd now, but earlier in the season, people were saying, oh, well, maybe they'll send him out on loan next year. And no, listen, he is a legit superstar when he's healthy. And so my fingers are crossed that he can stay healthy and that he can become the player we're all hoping that he can, because we know what he's capable of and we know what potential he has.
So, Marco, it's been a real pleasure catching up with you. Thank you so much for taking a deep dive on Napoli with us. Tell our listeners where they can find you, what you're working on this summer.
Oh, thanks, buddy. And Dave, like I said again, man, the pleasure is all mine. You and Alex do a fantastic job with this podcast. So I'm always honored to come on. And you can check me out on Stereo City Ivory Monday night. We are off for the summer. We'll be back when the new campaign kicks off. You can check us out on iTunes and all that fun stuff, right, wherever you get your podcast from. And you can read my work on Football Italia or in Soccer 360 and at Kubani7 on Twitter.
Awesome, Marco. Thank you so much for joining us. I look forward to chatting with you in the near future. Take care, buddy.
Yep. Cheers, David.